Well, good evening, folks. It's good to be with you. I have given talks on many historical figures over the years, ranging from 18th century Irish MPs through to St. Patrick, through to a variety of popes, but I've never given a lecture where the subjects are actually in the meeting at the time, so that adds a certain degree of interest to this evening's proceedings. The other thing that I've discovered about speaking on a subject that's still current is that your people are suggesting to you, don't forget to mention, which neither Luther nor Calvin have ever suggested to me. So I hope I don't omit any detail this evening that you may be anticipating. Well, as John said, our topic for this evening really is to look at 50 years of the college in the north. And as we come to reflect on 50 years of IBC in the north, it's necessary that we begin with a brief recollection of the years of the college's tenure in Dublin. On the 4th of October 1892, the Irish Baptist Training Institute was opened at 16 Harcourt Street, Dublin. It had been built largely with money from the American tycoon and philanthropist J.D. Rockefeller, and was named Rockefeller House. It had a first intake of 5 students. In 1901, the college was reconstituted by Hugh D. Brown, the pastor of the Harcourt Street Church, and relocated to 45 Harcourt Street. And really from the outset, the college was beset by small numbers, lack of support from the churches, and weak finances. Furthermore, the early decades of the 20th century were a difficult time for Baptists in the southern part of the island, and consequently difficult times for the college. Joshua Thompson notes that with the partition of Ireland and the growing strength of the churches in Northern Ireland, with a concurrent decline in the numbers of Baptists in the Irish Free State, the college became increasingly isolated from the life of the churches at large. Other issues also came into play, which hampered the development of the college's work. From the beginning, the college had a somewhat ambiguous relationship with the Baptist Union of Ireland. First of all, the college was effectively owned by Hugh D. Brown. When it later came under the wing of the Baptist Union of Ireland, the fact that Brown ensured half the trustees came from the Harcourt Street Church gave it a representation that was equal to that of the rest of the Baptist Union. Furthermore, there was widespread fear amongst Baptists in the early 20th century that theological education equaled theological liberalism. And perhaps something of the struggles of the college in those decades in Dublin is reflected in the fact that there were only 108 graduates from the college in 70 years. This meant that student numbers were always in single figures. And as Joshua Thompson points out, during the Dublin years, only 48 graduates in 70 years served at least part of their ministry amongst Irish Baptist churches. The college's Dublin years were always difficult years. Although many of the graduates went on to make very notable contributions to Baptist life in Ireland, and indeed beyond this island. So as early as 1949, the Baptist Union of Ireland Assembly instructed the council to consider the feasibility of the Dublin College, which by this time had relocated to 52 Terenure Road in 1940. And subsequent investigations revealed a good deal of disquiet amongst Baptist churches about the college. These included the fact that Principal Spurgeon smoked a pipe and that students were free to go to the cinema. As discussions around the college continued, an agreement was reached in 1952 between the College Committee and the Union Council that no attempt be made to interfere with the existing position during the present principalship, that of T.H. Spurgeon, if the Grosvenor Road Church, formerly the Harcourt Street Church, will now undertake that at the expiration of the principalship, it will cooperate with the union in seeking legal authority for a revision of the present college trust deed which will transfer future control to a committee appointed solely by the union. Well, the Grosvenor Road Church refused to sign up to any such agreement. In light of this, the 1953 Assembly shelved the issue until a more suitable time. The problems besetting the college only deepened. In the summer of 1956, there was what was described as a financial crisis. Furthermore, there were only between 3 and 5 students, a little difficult to ascertain just the precise number. It varies depending on which reports you read. In 1957, the college committee decided to investigate the future of the college as they scaled back its work. Arrangements were made for students to be boarded out and to receive one-to-one tuition from the principal, which is still a threat I give to current students. They also agreed that the Baptist Corporation should acquire sole ownership of the college and rent it back to the college. And a final decision on the future of the college was to be taken then at the end of the 1958 academic year. However, the immediacy of the crisis passed, and in 1960, help for the college from the Foreign Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention was mooted. This gave the Union Council an opportunity to again approach the Grosvenor Road Church about transferring control of the college. In June 1961, the Grosvenor Road Church agreed to do this upon certain conditions being met when Mr. Spurgeon retired in June 1963. With this agreed, the college decided to approach the 1962 Assembly with a view to relocating the college in or near Belfast. And it was further agreed that the scope of the training offered by the college should extend not only to men for pastoral ministry, but also to men and women for mission. Courses would also be offered that were of interest to other departments of the union's work, such as Baptist Youth. It was agreed that a principal would be appointed and that he would be assisted by 2 part-time tutors. The Dublin College ceased to exist on the 30th of June 1963. Its final 2 students were both named Ian Dixon. Its premises sold for £5,250, or if you like that in up-to-date figures, in today's money that's about £68,000. And its furnishings for £400 or £5,000 in today's money. And these were transferred to the newly acquired college premises at 67 Sandown Road. The cost of the move overall was estimated at £5,800 or £75,000 as today's equivalent. Whilst the college now moved on, it was not without a sense of thankfulness amongst the churches for all that the college had contributed to the life of the union for 70 years. I think it's interesting to note in passing that amongst those involved in the transfer from Dublin to Belfast were James Greenwood, who in 2013 retired from the College Management Committee, having served 50 years, and Pastor George Blaney, whose grandson Richard is presently a college student in Moira. Well, the Assembly in May 1963 also appointed a new principal, David Kingdon. Mr. Kingdon had trained at Spurgeon's College in London, and he then served as assistant at Purley Baptist Church. He took up his role on the 1st of September 1963, although the reconstituted college did not commence until 1964. The 21st of September 1964 is a date that will go down in history. It was the day I was born. And as I screamed my lungs out in the college hospital in Ballymena, the college at the same time was holding its inaugural meeting in the Great Victoria Street Church. 9 new students were enrolled for that year. It was a number that exceeded the expectations of the committee, who had planned for 12 admissions over the next 3 years. The new demand for places led to the appointment of a full-time tutor alongside the principal, Ivor Oakley, who also assumed pastoral responsibilities for the Strandtown Church. Miss Margaret Bryans was appointed as matron, a position described at the time by Principal Kingdon as being an onerous post. Amongst the first intake of students was Walter Entwistle of the Killyleagh Church. And he went on to serve, as we know, with the Baptist Home Mission before pastoring the Hollywood Church for 18 years and, of course, more recently has served as a president of our association. And Walter recalls that the facilities in the first year were poor since the renovation work had not yet been completed. Lectures were held in the lounge in 67 Sandown Road, where students took notes upon their knee. But it wasn't only the conditions that were Spartan, so too was the regimen. All single male students were residential. The day began at 6:30, where after getting washed and dressed, there followed personal devotions, breakfast and college devotions, all before lectures commenced at 9 o'clock. Lunch was at 1, followed by free time, before the evening meal at 5 o'clock. 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock was then set aside for study, before lights out at 11. As a raw young convert with little experience, Walter found that college, he says, stretched his mind, and he learned not only a lot about God, but he also learned a lot about himself. Whilst the more he went on in life and ministry, the more, he says, he came to appreciate his time at college and how it had prepared him for ministry, even in ways that he had not appreciated at the time. Throughout the decade of David Kingdon's principalship, the student body remained fairly steady. There were 111 students enrolled at IBC during that decade, and that is in comparison with 136 enrolments during the 70 years in Dublin. One striking thing looking at those who were enrolled during that decade is the number of students who came from outside Irish Baptist circles, and again the number of those who found employment outside Irish Baptist circles. Around one third of the students from 1964 to 74 came from outside Northern Ireland. 1967, Oswald Young was the first graduate of the newly constituted college to take up a pastorate in an Irish Baptist church, the Port Rush Church. And it was then 1971 before another graduate took up a pastorate of an Irish Baptist church, Keith Gilbert. And again, it was in the Port Rush Church. Another notable feature of the college from its reconstitution in Belfast was that it began to train women as well as men. The college was originally conceived as an institute for training men for pastoral ministry. However, during the Belfast years, this began to change. When the college opened in Belfast in 1964, Elizabeth Hughes, who later served with Baptist Missions, became the first woman to study at IBC. And Elizabeth Hughes' story reflects the changing face of IBC in its northern years. Students were no longer exclusively men entering college to train for pastoral ministry. Now both men and women trained for missionary work, and later children's work and RE teaching. There's a point I think that's sometimes overlooked, that since coming to the north, IBC has trained many students for many different kinds of Christian service. As the 1970s unfolded, a growing number of graduates of the college then began to become involved in the work of the union, and they took up pastorates in our churches. And one of these was Jim Murdoch. Jim came to the college in 1967, and he too remembers the discipline of those days when the college had a blazer badge, tie and scarf, all to be regularly worn. He recalls that only one evening a week was counted free to relax, and even then that ought to be done, he said, in a manner befitting a trainee for Christian ministry. However, he points out that ensuring a certain library window was closed and shoes hidden before morning lectures helped one to know that lights out was often circumnavigated. Looking back on those days, he says that 67 Sandown Road holds many vivid memories for both Eleanor, my wife, and I of friendship, teaching, awareness of Baptist life in Ireland, evidence of God's gracious care, adding that one praises God for those years when much was learned for the practice of ministry down the years since. Amongst those who came to the college in that first decade, perhaps one name stands out, that of Maurice Dowling. Morris came to IBC having graduated from the University of Cambridge in 1969 with a degree in modern and medieval languages. His application had come late during the summer, and Principal Kingdon noted that he had to make a snap decision. Well, in 1973, Morris was appointed a full-time tutor, a position he held with distinction until his retirement in 2012. And Morris's continued involvement with the college means that Principal Kingdon's snap decision still reverberates in college life more than 40 years later. Now, Morris's appointment was one of a number of staff changes in the early 1970s. In 1972, Roy McMullen joined the staff as full-time tutor in Old Testament. In 1974, Ivor Oakley was appointed principal with the departure of David Kingdon for South Africa. Whilst Norman Shields, who had served as part-time secretary of the college and tutor, was given a full-time appointment. That same year, Moira Richmond, another IBC graduate who had served with Baptist Missions in Peru, was appointed as domestic bursar. One of the most significant developments in the life of the college came in December 1975, when there was a preliminary meeting between the staff and representatives of Queen's University Belfast about the possibility of the college being recognised by the university. In February 1976, the staff agreed to recommend to the college committee that they apply to QUB to teach either the BD or the DIP-TH. And the reason for doing this was to enable students to access grants which they were unable to do as college-only students. There was some unease about this, both among students and the wider church constituency. Much of this focused on a change in the college constitution. If the college became a recognised College of Queen's, then it could no longer require students wishing to study university courses to subscribe to the doctrinal statement of the Baptist Union of Ireland. There were other objections, captured by Morris Darling in colourful fashion. He notes in a previous lecture, fears were immediately expressed that the college would be invaded by Marxists, Hindus, IRA, terrorists, etc., all anxious to study QUB theology awards, and all littering the place with beer cans and cigarette butts. Morris recalled that a great deal of bad feeling was aroused at the time. When a motion was brought before the 1976 Assembly to agree this move, it was only narrowly approved by 132 votes to 128. But despite such misgivings and uncertainties, the Church's support of the college remained solid and was reflected in a 40% increase in support by the churches. And the left-wing IRA terrorists smoking and littering the place with beer cans did not materialise. Now, throughout the 1970s and the 1980s, the college continued to move along at a steady pace with a regular intake of students. The year 1983 was a somewhat unusual year, although not known at the time. Of the 16 students admitted that year, there was a future association director, William Colville, a future Baptist Youth Secretary, Mike Ewan, along with his wife Shona, and three future full-time members of IBC faculty, Edwin Ewart, Peter Firth, and David Luke. 1983 also saw Philip Johnson, an IBC graduate, take up the position of Old Testament tutor, following Roy McMullen's decision to return to pastoral ministry. However, Roy's involvement with the college as a lecturer was not yet over. He returned for two further stints as a part-time Old Testament lecturer in 1993 and again in 2006. Alan Baird, who was a student in the 1980s and another future member of faculty, remembers that this was still a period of strict discipline in the college, where Principal Oakley, as he puts it, ran a very tight ship. Smart dress was still the order of the day, although one brave soul dared to wear denim, and that despite the threats of what fellow students would do to him. Alan recalls sermon class being especially daunting. He says, no student who participated in sermon workshop will ever forget Principal Oakley mounting the lectern following feedback, with that little blue book with the white cross on the cover, First Aid in English Grammar. Like many students, Alan recalls the importance of his time at IBC. He says, "There is no doubt that my period of training at IBC had a life-changing impact on me. It equipped me for the role of ministry God was later to call me into. It shaped me as a person not only in my spiritual life, but in the outworking of that life also." As recently as the 1980s, there was still a link with the Dublin College in the person of L.E. Deans, who was college president. Each year he was invited to the college for lunch, and after this he would regale students with memories of his time in ministry, and then leave them with some words of wisdom. And he was very fondly remembered by all the students who sat in his lectures and who listened to him. With the approach of the 1990s, the college again underwent some significant changes in personnel. In 1988, Principal Oakley accepted an invitation to become principal of the Scottish Baptist College. Norman Shields became acting principal, filling this role until his retirement in 1990. That year also saw Philip Johnson take up a position at Cambridge University. With the departure of Dr. Oakley and Mr. Shields, there was a real sense of the end of an era, with both men having been associated with the college since its move to Belfast. And of course, both men are fondly remembered by many students whose lives they impacted as they prepared for works of service. Obviously, with such significant departures, new staffing arrangements had to be put in place. In 1989, Dr. Hamilton Moore, a graduate of the college and pastor of the Macrofelt Church, took up the role of New Testament tutor and became principal in 1990. He had the distinction of being the first Irish-born principal in the history of the college. Alongside Principal Moore, John Burney, another college graduate and the pastor of the Lisnaglere Church, was appointed college secretary. William Colville, the pastor of the Dundonald Church, took on part-time responsibilities as Old Testament tutor. The transition had been smooth, and in 1991 the college had an intake of 16 students, which was the highest intake of students since 1985, when there had been 18, and the joint second highest since the reconstitution of the college. Neil Watson, who came to the college in 1990, recalls that with the arrival of the new principal and secretary, there was a feeling of a new start at IBC. There was also some relaxation in the previously strict discipline that had marked the life of college for so many students. Neil recalls, for example, lots of volleyball in the back garden, including a floodlit game with every light in the college on, unknown to Moira Richmond. 1992 also saw the centenary celebrations of the college. This was marked in a number of ways, including a centenary dinner and the establishment of the Student Centenary Bursary Fund. It also saw the return of Mr. Kingdon and Dr. Oakley to join the celebrations. They perhaps saw how things had changed as they witnessed Neil Watson and a fellow student being lynched in class, tied to a tree and doused with flour and eggs on the front lawn to mark their forthcoming weddings. I recall being there that day and overheard Mr. Kingdon say, "Those poor fellows. Now, where did I leave my camera?" Although some things did not change, or did change, not everything changed. Neil remarks how it was the practical experience I gained during summer placements and preaching engagements that helped me most in terms of preparation for ministry, perhaps even more so than college classes, although the teaching, discussions and class helped perhaps to lead the way for the practical experiences. 1992 also marked the departure of Moira Richmond from the role of domestic bursar due to her marriage to Brian Dorman, a former graduate of the college. And together they went on to serve with Baptist missions. With Moira's departure, the college ceased to be fully residential. The new domestic bursar was Eileen Ball, a member of the Ballykeel Church. And Eileen quickly grew in the students' affections because of her evident love and care for them. Sadly, her tenure was cut short by illness, and she had to stand down from her role in 1996. The role of domestic bursar was then replaced by that of registrar. The new registrar was Patricia Poots, again a former college student. And Pat continued in this role until 2003, when she and her husband relocated to undertake missionary work. Her position was filled by Kim Kelly, another college graduate. In 1993, Paul Williamson, a college graduate and pastor of the Uma Church, was appointed full-time Old Testament tutor. And he held this position until taking up an appointment in 2000 with Moore Theological College in Sydney. The initial appointment at MTS was for 3 years. However, he remains part of the faculty there and has gained a worldwide reputation for Old Testament scholarship. The coming years as teaching responsibilities were largely taken up by Sarah Crowe, another college graduate who had served with Baptist missions in France. Sarah continued with her teaching responsibilities until 2005. And after becoming Mrs. Dalrymple and spending the intervening years in Scotland, Sarah will resume responsibilities for teaching Old Testament in a few weeks' time. In the early 1990s, there were ongoing discussions in the College Council about providing opportunities for Eastern European students to come to study at the college. Eventually, in September 1994, three Romanian students began their studies: Marianne Decenu, Catalin Kreuter, and Benjamin Faragu. This was the beginning of strong links between the college and churches in Romania, which continue until the present day. In February 1998, the Union Secretary William Colville made a presentation to the College Board, which was to herald changes that were of the most far-reaching consequences for the college since the move to Belfast. The Secretary spoke to the Board about a recent agreement by the Corporation Directors to investigate the possibility of bringing the Union Administration offices and college premises together in one suite of buildings. This would involve either a move to a new site outside Belfast or the redevelopment of the college premises at Sandown Road. At this point, the Board was unconvinced that such a move would be in the best interests of the college. However, the Secretary agreed to keep the Board abreast of the Corporation's continuing research into this matter. As discussions continued, the College Board's reservations continued. However, it also became clear that the need for repairs to the Sandown Road premises, especially the outside classrooms, meant that an urgent decision with regard to premises had to be made, and the college was running a deficit. At a College Board meeting in April 1999, it was agreed in principle to support the move to amalgamate the Union offices with the college. Whilst reservations remained, Joshua Thompson, who had been instrumental in the move from Dublin to Belfast, noted similar fears to those being expressed now were expressed then. As the college entered the new millennium, it became apparent that suitable new premises were not going to be easily found. Several attempts to secure a suitable venue met with no success. Indeed, the college would not enter into its new purpose-built premises until 2004. The years 2000 and 2001 witnessed a record-equaling intake of students for an academic year. But despite this, the college continued to struggle financially. Operating with a deficit, financial support from the churches also dropped. Indeed, the annual college report asked in the year 2000, do Irish Baptists need a college of their own? Do they want a college of their own? It was also around this time that an old fear emerged, or re-emerged, that was the link between the college and Queen's University. It was suggested by some that the ability of the college to prepare men and women for ministry was being diminished by that university link. The fear was that students were only being academically prepared. The teaching staff robustly defended the college against such suggestions. They pointed out that far from the university dominating courses on offer, the college had been able to shape the theological curriculum of the university, while students preparing for ministry took courses that lay beyond the university curriculum and which specifically prepared them for ministry. The discussion was perhaps part of a wider sense of disconnection between the college and the churches at this time. Out of those record intakes of students, only three went on to pastor association churches. There was a growing perception amongst would-be students that going to IBC would not lead to an opening into a church. In each of the years, 2002 to 2007, the intake of college students fell to single figures. Only six of the students who graduated in those years would take up pastorates in our churches. The issues confronting IBC were addressed when the church's council met in Ballymena in November 2000. And here they considered a presentation on the college by the college secretary and principal on the relationship between IBC and the churches. The presentation was followed by the unusual step of the council dividing into small groups, where each group was given four questions to discuss. What issues could lead to IBC having less than universal support among the churches? How do you suggest such criticisms ought to be addressed? What factors encourage support for the work of IBC among the churches? In what ways can IBC be a better steward of the churches and the work of the gospel? Irish Baptist Life noted that in the group's comment was largely frank, gracious, and positive. The groups also produced a large volume of feedback, which was then collated and discussed by the college board. The formal response from the college came at the November Churches Council in 2001. The college secretary noted that the previous council had been useful in getting the college in touch with the grassroots of our churches, and much had emerged from the session that had given the college food for thought. However, he noted that the college staff remained small and would be stretched in the implementation of much that was desirable. He also stressed the need for the college to be supported across our family of churches. And once again, the mood of the council regarding the college was positive and supportive. That same month, Principal Moore and the college secretary visited the University of Wales Lampeter. This was to explore the possibility of a new MA degree that would be offered on a wider basis than the usual academic requirements, and which would facilitate further study by those already engaged in Christian ministry. In December, the college board agreed that the college should offer University of Wales theological postgraduate degrees from the following academic year. 2003 saw the start of the last academic year for the college in Sandown Road. It was at this time that Joshua Thompson, who had been so instrumental in bringing the college to Belfast, stood down from the management board. This ended a 50-year association with the college. The same year, a strategy development committee was formed, whose purpose was to think and plan strategically for the college and its work over the period of the next 5 to 10 years. The heart of the committee's vision was to combine academic excellence with spiritual character formation, and it undertook to draw up a new college course that would reflect these emphases. The committee finally reported to the College Board in November 2004 and to the Church's Council in November 2005. Its report recognised that the college needed to provide training that was vocational and relevant. It also stressed the importance of practical training through placements, and furthermore, there was a need to be proactive in developing relationships between the college and the churches. The next few years saw significant changes in IBC. From 2008, primary degrees were validated first through the University of Wales, and from 2010 through the University of Chester. In 2007, the training director, John Burney, resigned to take up a new role in ministry in Eastern Europe. Nigel Young, a member of the Windsor Church and recently returned from missions work in Niger, was appointed in his place. In the same year, Ken Scott, who had been working with Baptist Missions in Peru, was appointed part-time postgraduate director. Edwin Ewart, pastor of the Coleraine Church, was appointed assistant principal before taking up the role of principal in 2010 when Dr. Moore retired. Further members of staff were then added: Peter Firth, pastor of the Cumber Church, and a fellow called David Luke, pastor of the Gilnahirk Church. I've merely outlined some of these more recent developments over the last decade or so, not because they're unimportant, but because such recent events belong to some future account of the college's history during the Moira years. And it will be then that the impact of these changes can be more accurately assessed. Let me try to draw together a few threads. Whilst the churches of our association have generally been favourably disposed to the work of IBC, there's often been a degree of tension between churches and college. It would be disingenuous to suggest otherwise. And indeed, this is often the lot of a denominational college. In Irish Baptist circles, those tensions have centred upon a fear that somehow the college was introducing liberalising trends through theological education. That was a fear during the Dublin years, and it has often been a fear during the college's time in the north. In fact, the debate is not even as new as that. If you go back to the 18th century, what were Irish Baptists discussing? They were discussing whether or not a learned ministry was necessary. And it is an important debate for us to have as a family of churches. It reminds everyone about the core values of IBC. It's not just about theological education. It is about preparation for ministry. Throughout our history, college staff have been under no illusion that theological education in itself is inadequate preparation for ministry. This has been reflected not only in the ethos of the college, but by the fact that the college staff have always been involved in local churches themselves, as well as carrying on a wider ministry in our churches. Notably, two principals served as pastors while working at the college. Also, the college has regularly drawn upon those in ministry to serve as part-time lecturers. These things alone demonstrate that theological teaching at the college has never been removed from the practice of ministry. Instead, we've always sought to strike the balance between training for ministry alongside a rigorous academic program that meets not only the high expectations of the academy, but the increasingly high expectations of students. As students tackle a wide range of material and are given many perspectives which they need if they're to minister in our highly literate and educated society, it has always been under the guidance of teachers who are committed to a high view of Scripture. We might add to this the student experience. Not every student who has passed through the doors of IBC has had a wonderful experience. Sadly, not every student has continued into ministry, or in some cases even continued in the Christian life. However, we might measure alongside this the positive impact that the college has had upon the lives of students. Students generally look back with a sense of fondness for their college experience. In particular, there is a sense of gratitude for fellowship with other students and the impact that particular lecturers have had upon their lives and their subsequent ministries. That ministry has been carried on in many of our churches. IBC has been at the heart of our association. Many of our pastors, past and present, have been graduates of IBC. They have served our churches well and faithfully. At present, more than 80 of our churches have pastors. Of these, almost 40 are former graduates of IBC. No other training institute has had a bigger impact on our churches than IBC. For many vacant churches, IBC continues to be their first port of call. Our burden as a college staff is that God would raise up more men, not simply to fill the seats at IBC, but to fill the vacancies within our churches. There is a great need for a new generation of pastors, and we would encourage you to join with us in praying for such men. Finally, and briefly, a word about the current situation at IBC. As someone who has only recently joined the staff in a full-time capacity, I have often thought to myself, this is an exciting time to be at IBC. We have a new purpose-built college that is the envy of many who pass through our doors. We have, over the last few years, had a sizeable student intake, so that each day there's a considerable buzz about the place. Throughout the staff student body, there is a warm sense of Christian fellowship. At the end of each semester, the student evaluation of the tuition they receive is almost universally positive. But perhaps most exciting of all is the fact that over the last few years, we have seen men and women go out into Christian ministry with great regularity. Since 2011, we have seen 10 of our graduates take up full-time pastoral positions in our churches. Add to that the number who have taken up assistantships, gone into work and mission, or taken up pastorates in other denominations. This is hugely encouraging for us as a college. This is an exciting time for the college, but it always remains a work in progress. We continue to develop as a college. And part of that development is to seek a closer relationship between the college and our churches. We're conscious that it is not our college, but it is the training department of our association. And as such, we long to see people raised up from our own churches for ministry in our own churches. As I've already noted, we would ask our churches to join with us in prayer for that. Also, modern education remains an expensive business. As has always been the case, many of our students make considerable sacrifices to train for Christian ministry. As a college, we continue to look to our churches to help us financially so that we might support students and provide them with adequate resources. The Apostle Paul, he didn't go to IBC, but he did provide us with a charter for the work we continue to do. As he tells Timothy, entrust to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. We very much see ourselves as helping to fulfill that exhortation. And we hope and pray that you will continue to stand with us in doing that.